of you in the audience, welcome. We will start today's meeting with a public hearing on House Bill 2600. And Jim, would you give us a staff summary, please?
Yes, sir. House Bill 2600 authorizes the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to make grants or loans to public-private partnerships for provisions of advanced technology education and training opportunities in communities around the state. Specifies the maximum amount for grants and loans made for certain uses. Creates advanced technology education and training fund. Allocates monies from the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for grant and loan program.
Thank you very much. The Speaker of the House is here, and we'll ask her to come up. And absolutely. Representative Manas Anderson and Senator John Minnis are all approaching the table.
Good afternoon. Chair Beckman, members of the committee, I'm Karen Minnis, Speaker of the House, representing House District 49. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2600, which would improve advanced technology education and training opportunities in Oregon. Career and technical education has many benefits and ramifications for our state. It will be a critical part of our state's future, increase our state workforce, and contribute to the economic vitality of communities throughout Oregon. Additionally, skills acquired through career and technical education will help our children entering college and university. House Bill 2600 will help our state's high school juniors and seniors to be better prepared for life after high school, whether that's in the workforce or getting a jump start on college or university education. Let me take a moment to relate my own experience with the issue this bill seeks to address. As a senior in high school, I attended James Monroe High School, which no longer exists, and it was a girls' polytechnic, if you've been around for a while. But I received a skill there as a dental assistant and graduated from James Monroe High School, went into the workforce, and had a pretty well-paying position in a dental office, which we were able to use about 3 or 4 years. I got married young and helped a certain person get through some college. So it's a very beneficial skill. Being prepared for life after high school wound up being a huge benefit to me personally, and I want to extend similar opportunities to our future high school classes as they prepare for their future. That's why House Bill 2600 is important, helping to prepare our state's children better life for once they leave high school. Colleagues, I don't have to tell you that Oregon will continue to experience a diversification in its economy. Especially in this current recession, it will become ever more important that we have businesses and industries from a variety of fields. While natural resource industries will remain a critical part of our state's economic engine, it is clear that new industries will have needs to be met that involve advanced technology, which will become critical to our economic revival and success. Educational opportunities available in our traditional educational institutions often fall short in meeting the additional training demands of this new economy. On the bright side, the solutions to this problem are popping up around the state. House Bill 2600 helps promote these creative community solutions. I've seen this creativity to my own East Multnomah County communities, Troutdale, Fairview, Wood Village, and Gresham. A broad range of folks from local school districts, Mount Hood Community College, OHSU, city governments, and local high-tech businesses like LSI Logic, Boeing, and others came together to develop the Center for Advanced Learning. Bill Lesh, who has been working on this project for some time, is here today and has been instrumental in getting the Center for Advanced Learning off the ground in a very successful way. This project has begun and will have an eye towards providing programs in information technology, medical and health careers, and pre-engineering and manufacturing. The Center for Advanced Learning demonstrates so well the way to increase student learning and achievement, increase the number of students pursuing advanced specializations, serves as an example of how to become a regional education business industry partnership model for the 21st century. We are seeing this in other parts of the state as well. community leaders around Oregon are using partnerships, advanced technology, and existing education facilities to address their specific economic needs. House Bill 2600 will provide the initial help through grants or loans for infrastructure, equipment, and planning to encourage these worthy initiatives. Let me know, there are dash 3 amendments to the bill. My staff will go through them with you later, which will have been worked through and agreed upon by various education and private industry groups. I'm supporting the bill as amended by the dash 3 amendments, and I hope for your support of the amended bill. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You're the entertainment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm delighted to be here in support of House Bill 2600. This bill will...
Excuse me, Representative, your name, please.
And I am Lori Montes-Anderson from House District 50, which is Gresham. This bill will help Oregon's economy, and that's what we need to do to get Oregon back on the right track. This bill provides grants that will be able to support a collaborative project that is like the one that Karen has, Speaker Minnis has already mentioned in her testimony. It's called the Center for Advanced Learning, and I call it the CAL. It has, I think, exceptional promise. It is a regional education and industry partnership public charter school that has the potential, I believe, to become a Northwest and national model for the 21st century. We can't let projects like these pass us by, and this bill will definitely be able to support projects like this. The CAL is a high achievement school network committed to helping all students achieve, and it involves Centennial School District, Gresham Barlow, Reynolds, Mount Hood Community College, and the Mount Hood Regional Education Consortium. They have been working on this for over 3 years. The building is already under construction. We were able to pass a bond so the members of the community see the need of how we need to have a school, a charter school like this, that's going to specifically train our students, 11th and 12th graders, in areas, in jobs, in careers that where there is an actual need. It's a wonderful concept, and we need a legislation that makes good economic sense and meets the needs of the industry. Thank you for your, I hope, 100% support.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, you guys are the certified smart individuals with respect to education policy, but let me just give you a few figures that Holly Cooper, my legislative assistant, put together for me in preparing for this presentation. Nationally, there are about 90% of the students surveyed want to attend college or pursue college after graduation from high school, and 67% of them actually do enroll in college. However, this is a major disconnect between the students' aspirations and their actual high school preparation. 33% of high school students take a high school curriculum that prepares them for college-level work. Almost 50% of those who do enroll in college need remedial training or remedial education afterwards. 50% of college enrollees complete a college program eventually. Traditional vocational programs do not offer the academic or technical rigor to adequately prepare students to the demands of post-secondary education or the high-skilled workplace. These figures are 2003 February figures from the U.S. Department of Education. In Oregon, currently, there are several communities that do have programs that strive to promote the concepts in the advanced technology education program methodologies. And the Virtual Skills Center in Morrow County and Umatilla counties is one example, Advanced Technology Center in Harney and Malheur counties, and the Center for Advanced Learning, spoken to by the speaker and Representative Lori Montes-Anderson. I just want to give you kind of a personal testimony, if you will. I was a metal shop major in high school, graduating in 1972. Went in the United States Air Force a month after graduation from high school and became a jet engine mechanic. The technical skills that I learned in high school, interestingly, were a motivating factor for me once I did enter the Air Force and realized that being a jet engine mechanic and serving in the United States military was not my ultimate career goal. And I began to start taking some community college classes in the military. Subsequently, got out of the military, transferring into the Oregon Air National Guard, again as a jet engine mechanic. Went to work for, this is a long time ago, I can't even remember, the Bingham Willamette Company down on Front Avenue as an apprentice machinist, and started a vocational training program there, but still had a desire to go to college. And I did have some veterans benefits. I looked into an engineering program at Portland State University in applied sciences, and went to my foreman about 14 months into my apprenticeship and said, I'm going to quit. I'm going to go to Portland State University and become an engineer. They frankly could not believe that I was going to do that. I did resign the apprenticeship. Went to Portland State University, and then I found out that Munchkins could become police officers, and that's a joke, by the way, you can laugh. But about 1974, 75, short people could become police officers. Interesting that in my high school years, becoming a police officer was one of my aspirations, but I'm only 5'6" tall, and at that time, the Portland Police Bureau had a height requirement of 5'9". The Oregon State Police had a height requirement of 6 foot. So my career goals changed in the process, and I started in the Administration of Justice program at Portland State University while my child bride worked as a dental assistant, and we threw newspapers on front doors for the Oregonian to try to supplement our income so that we could make it through those interesting years in the early part of our marriage. And I guess I'm saying all of that to say that in the hearts and minds of many young people who come from poverty backgrounds like I did, having a vision for education is something that's very, very important. Vocational technical programs really supply a connection between education and their ability to find their place in this world. When I became a legislator in 1993, I co-chaired the Joint Ways and Means Committee. One of the individuals who came into my committee asking me for money was a fellow by the name of Ron Dexter. Ron Dexter happened to be my high school wrestling coach at Madison High School, was then working for the Department of Education. He was in asking for money from the legislature to begin a program, or to facilitate a program, at the Saban Skills Center in the North Clackamas School District, a program that was near and dear to my heart. And so even though we were shifting about $1.2, $1.5 billion in revenue because of Measure 5, we found $2 million to put into the Saban School Center to begin that, because it's the very same kind of principles that are being used in that program that I think this program is asking for, the creation of a fund that will help to facilitate a connection between business, the applied sciences, the technical skills, and education, because education does not end once someone finishes a degree or finishes an apprenticeship. It's, in my opinion, to be a lifelong objective, a lifelong goal, and hopefully this committee will vote favorably in support of this bill, and there are -3 amendments, which I support, and I'll defer to your wisdom with respect to how this bill ultimately comes out. Glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, a quick history lesson here for all the members. This is our third attempt. The other two attempts fail because of the cost. How is this one funded differently than the previous two sessions?
I think we've lowered the bar, and as far as the ultimate outcome remains to be seen. We understand there are challenges this year around, but I think whatever amount that we are able to identify, they will make do with. And if it's no amount at this time, we'll proceed. But I think this is a good concept that we need to take statewide and provide communities the opportunity to adopt this into their own and into their own community as well. Again, I think before it was, the price tag was significantly more in times past. I think it was around $250,000 to $500,000 they were asking coming in, and they've lowered their expectations significantly on that point.
Yes, Representative Moss.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up, too. Remember that the only careers that are being focused on are information technology, pre-engineering, manufacturing, and medical health. Any one person going into any of these career tracks will have a very high, it will have a living wage higher than a living wage. So this is going to help us, help Oregon, because these people will be trained and therefore be making very high paying jobs. A nurse, of course, can average anywhere, right around $40,000, $50,000 a year starting out. So, and it's the same for an electrical engineer or, so just keep that in mind also.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming down. We have Andrea Henderson. and others. No.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And I wanted to come up and testify in support of House Bill 2600. So with me today, Cam Poitrella, who's the Commissioner for Community Colleges. And we very much appreciate the interest of the Speaker in advanced technology education and the work of her office in bringing this bill forward. Some Oregon Community Colleges are very supportive of this effort to expand advanced technology training. We believe this kind of effort is critical to developing Oregon's workforce. And community colleges play a key role in the technical training in Oregon. We're excited about this opportunity to pilot programs that will strengthen the ties between community colleges and K-12 education to deliver technology and master education. So very supportive of House Bill 2600, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, keep going.
Good afternoon. For the record, Cam Poitrella, Commissioner for Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I want to add my voice in support of House Bill 2600 and do appreciate the effort that the Speaker's office has brought to bringing advanced technology centers back in front of the legislature in a form that likely, and with a price tag, that will likely pass along. I am here today to tell you that the department does feel like it can shoulder the additional responsibility necessary under House Bill 2600, and I look forward to partnering with the Department of Education and others to make this happen. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Now, Bruce Anderson, Bill Lesh, and Harvey Matthews.
I'm Bill Lesh, and I'm the director of the Center for Advanced Learning. And as you are receiving at the current moment is some material about the center, I'd just like to take a couple minutes of your time and give you an overview of what that project consists of and what its goals are. We received a handout which shows what the core outcomes are for the Center for Advanced Learning in the three program areas that have been spoken to previously in information technology, engineering, manufacturing, as well as in health sciences. These outcomes were developed in concert with local business and industry folks. These are outcomes that they help define, and they will drive the curriculum that we've chosen to use at the Center for Advanced Learning. As you turn this page over, you will see the way we've orchestrated the coursework that students will have during their junior and senior year. They will share time between their home high school and the Center for Advanced Learning to give them an opportunity to have some unique programming at the post-secondary level if they're so inclined while they're still in high school. These students who choose to do that will be able to have this opportunity for post-secondary education in these career fields with no tuition attached. Their parents are very happy about this dilemma. They think it's a wonderful situation for them to begin their post-secondary education well ahead of high school graduation. The students in this program will still graduate from their home high school and move on from there to whatever their post-secondary plans. We feel that this is an opportunity for students to do some very intentional work of their choice in an environment that would be very impossible to replicate in individual high schools. We chose to pick on the areas that are in the high demand in our workforce as the target areas for our community. And then we intentionally went out to convince the public that if we jointly went together to form this collaboration, we would have a successful opportunity that all the students could benefit who chose to pursue this. We now have admitted 225 students so far for next fall's opening class of juniors. I am open to questions.
Thank you.
Would also like to call to your attention that you have a personal CD of the Center for Advanced Learning, which has its website and about a 2.5-minute video that shows you the nature of the project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce Anderson with the Speaker's Office here to just go through. I thought it would be helpful to go through the Dash 3 amendment so in the bill to clearly understand the changes and so forth. Thanks for the opportunity to appear. Before I begin, I just want to note some of the folks that we brought together to help work on the bill and the amendments to it. Oregon School Boards Association, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, AEA, Oregon Chapter, AOI, the Department of Education, and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. We sat down at a couple of meetings and kind of just hammered through the whole issues of what this bill is addressing. We made some modifications so that folks were comfortable with this concept and how we can move this through the process. And the Dash 3 amendments that you have before you today are basically the result of that. Also, I did also speak with Lori Wimmer-Whalen of the OEA, and she has expressed her support as well for that. Going through the bill here, I'll try and do this at the same time and be as brief as possible. I know you've got a lot on your plate this day. Basically, the first several lines of the bill, lines 3 through 9, denote a general policy statement on career and technical education on behalf of the state and the legislature. There's some good, very good thoughts that went into that. There was one slight correction or change, I should say, that the bill changes on line 8 of the first page there, just to rather than saying career and technical education increases, we're saying that career and technical skills, knowledge, and performance would increase access to post-secondary education opportunities. Section 1 of the bill is unchanged by the amendments and creates the fund. And it's a separate fund separate from the general fund that's within the state treasury, and it's funded basically for the purposes of the bill to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Section 2 is where we change some things around there. It's generally the same language, quite frankly, but basically in just a short summary, it describes the procedures for making the grants and loans and setting the standards for the programs that can qualify for these grants and loans. And I think they rewrite this section from the original language as introduced to really clarify the issue in the educational context here. Going to the Dash 3 amendments, sub 1 denotes the support for public-private partnerships to make these projects move forward and showing the need for public entities, mainly school districts, ESDs, community colleges, to team up with local businesses to provide career and technical education. Sub 2 lays out the criteria for an entity to receive a grant or loan. Sub 3 sets up the process for the community colleges department to make the grants or loans. Sub 4 denotes a list of about 10 items that entities seeking grants or loans must show they have in order to prioritize the applicants that are submitting applications for this. Sub 5 states what the grants or loans can be used for, so that is restricted, I believe. Sub 6 states what the application for the grant and loan must include. Sub 7 provides for acceptance of federal and other funds for the projects, so that we've got some other avenues of funding available for this that exist right now. Sub 8 discusses the repayment of loans and their the repayment of the loans being deposited back into the fund. Section 3 allocates the funds from the lottery to begin the program. And the Dash 3 amendments there fills in the blank that's on page 3 of the bill, line 18, with the figure of $49,000. And finally, Section 4, which is a new section from the Dash 3 amendments, it's an emergency clause to begin implementation of this right away. So that's pretty much what is involved in the bill. And with the reduction, or with the amount at $49,000, really a subsequent referral to Ways and Means is not needed. And I would ask if we could take that off and move the bill along. And I'd be glad to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Backlund. Members of the committee, my name is Harvey Matthews. I'm here representing Associated Oregon Industries. We're Oregon's largest business association, representing over 20,000 of Oregon's companies. Our members employ over 325,000 of Oregon's private workforce, and we are highly dependent on the quality of education provided by Oregon's public schools. That said, Associated Oregon Industries strongly supports passage of House Bill 2600 with the -3 amendments. This bill is a result of a collaboration by education, business, the Department of Education, and the legislature. And I did want to take a moment and thank Bruce Anderson from the Speaker's office for coordinating this large group of people around a fairly complex topic. All the time bills are stacking up on his desk that he's got to refer. So he did some great work around this. This bill rose due to a shared belief that if our state does not establish a clear commitment to specialized skill development and career education in high school, Oregon's economic vitality will suffer. And the goal of House Bill 2600 is to increase the number of students taking a rigorous academic curriculum so they are fully prepared for college without needing remediation, and also high-skill entry-level employment. Technical education is already working in Oregon schools. It's a very quiet success. In 213 high schools in 2001, over 7,000 students took advanced courses that gave them dual credits, thus saving Oregon families over $1.1 million in course fees that they would otherwise pay at other institutions. We want to expand that with this bill. House Bill 2600 would create a fund to give grants and loans to qualifying partnerships as they develop and start their advanced technology and training programs. Your yes vote on House Bill 2600 will result in more students taking rigorous academic curriculum, improve their readiness for college and the workforce, and improve the graduation rates of Oregon students. And thank you for your support.
Thank you very much. Oh, excuse me, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, I think maybe Bruce, you're the best one since you ramrodded this. The bill actually, is that not the right word? You led this, is that better? Sorry.
Shepherded it.
Anyhow, the bill actually applies to all communities in the state of Oregon, and the examples that we had from the Cal, if you will, is merely an example of what can be done in this regard. Mm-hmm. Is that a yes?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that is correct. There are a wide variety of programs that are kind of getting started around the state. The Center for Advanced Learning is one I'm familiar with, but there are others. Can you touch on those, please, Bill?
I think, and Harvey can add to this, but the goal of House Bill 2600 is to be able to have students be able to access the kind of education they need regardless of what community they reside in. The model that we shared with you today around the Center for Advanced Learning fits the East County partnership that we have. But we want to be able to facilitate this kind of development of partnerships in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, and in places that don't have the kind of environment that exists in the metro area. And we think this is a good vehicle for those kinds of things to emerge, and having some resources of stimulus to be able to establish some of those relationships. We can't have a we-they mentality in our state around our educational programs. We have to have access in all the locales for economic vitality.
And just to follow up here, just some of the areas that do have this type of program getting started. Umatilla and Morrow counties are getting some started. Polk County, just west of where we're sitting, has begun one over in Central Oregon in Redmond. They've got one that's being developed. Harney and Malheur counties, I didn't know about that one, or their high school districts are getting set up with Treasure Valley Community College. Some in the Columbia Gorge, Clackamas County, Lane County, and then I see here one down on the southwestern Oregon coast. So a lot of interest in that in this type of a program. And it's really, I think it's about making a difference. I think as you've heard already in the lives of kids getting ready to, or getting prepared to graduate from high school, getting them prepared for college or the workforce, whatever their choice.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, and I think we may have a few others that may not have gotten on the sign-up sheet, but
On the sign-up sheet, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that's fine. On the sign-up sheet, we do have Paula Gabrud from Mount Hood Community College, who is here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. For the record, my name is Paula Gubrud, and I'm the Nursing Program Director at Mount Hood Community College, and I'm representing our President's office today. Mount Hood Community College is pleased to support House Bill 2600. This legislation supports seamless articulation of advanced technology education between our local high schools, community colleges, and universities. Local high school students will be able to earn dual credit that will include advanced high school courses and courses offered at Mount Hood Community College currently. These courses will also be transferable to four-year universities leading to baccalaureate degrees. We believe this model is going to create efficient access to advanced education and expeditious placement to family-wage jobs. We really believe this will be a model for the state. House Bill 2600 addresses important needs for residents served by Mount Hood Community College District. Currently, we have a very high unemployment rate, and many of our students are place-bound. Through the collaboration between the CAL, Mount Hood Community College, and local industry, students can access affordable education without leaving the area. We are currently involved with creating a very strong partnership between the nursing program and the CAL, whereby nursing courses will be offered at the CAL, and students will be able to move back and forth through the between the two institutions. We encourage your support of this bill. We see it as a real emerging model for education for East County residents and Oregonians. Glad to answer any questions regarding the college's role in this project.
Thank you very much. The sign-up sheet I have is exhausted. Does that include everyone who wants to speak or testify? Gina, do we have any other? Okay. Well, thank you very much. With that, then, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2600, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2600. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support this bill, and I'm very happy to do so. My question was to make it really clear that this is applicable to the whole state. I know one of the toughest choices I had to make one time was not to support money for the Save and Skills Center, which I think was probably the best such organization and educational opportunity in the whole state. But a bunch of money was allocated to it rather than being available and open to the state as a whole. Even though we're not able to give a lot of money to this right now, I think it certainly puts out the right message that we need to work collaboratively and cooperatively with whatever partners we can find for these kinds of programs. So I'm happy to support it.
Okay. Do you have a motion for us?
If nobody else has anything to say, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 26-2000 with the -3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And don't forget to rescind.
I would like to rescind the referral, subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Hobson has moved...
probably should do the amendments first. Can we back up and you raise your back?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2600.
Thank you. Representative Hobson moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2600. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so moved. Representative Hobson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2600 to the floor with the due pass recommendation rescinding the referral to Ways and Means.
Very good. Representative Hobson moves House Bill 2600 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and we will rescind the referral to Ways and Means. Discussion. Okay, Gina, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Excused? Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2600 as amended passes. You have a carrier.
Aye.
Representative Hobson will be the carrier. Thank you very much.
Speaker, minutes.
Let's ask the speaker to carry this bill, Jim.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bruce, does the speaker want to carry this bill?
Okay, so the speaker, we'll put a co-carrier, the speaker or Representative Montes Anderson.
That'd be good.
Members, we're kind of going out of order here. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3603. And, Jim, would you give us a staff summary here, and we'll explain what our plan is here.
Yes, sir. House Bill 3603 directs the Oregon Health and Science University to distribute grants to post-secondary institutions to expand the capacity of nursing education programs. Establishes the Oregon Nursing Shortage Coalition Committee to adopt criteria for awarding grants and to select grant recipients. Specifies uses of grant funds, appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Administrative Services for the Oregon Health and Science University grants. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003.
Thank you. Members, Representative Montes Anderson has asked that House Bill 3603 be moved to the Committee on Health and Human Services. There are two other bills that are there currently, and she has requested this bill to also be sent there because they could deal with all three of these bills at the same time. The bill, I think, could have been easily referred to the Health and Human Services Committee initially, even though it was referred to the Education Committee. So I think that would be a very reasonable thing for us to do, and so we're dealing with that bill this afternoon. Representative Hobson, do you have a motion for it?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3603 with the due pass recommendation and ask that the bill be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services.
Thank you. Representative Hobson has moved House Bill 3603 with a due pass recommendation and ask that the bill be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. Not to the floor. Did I misstate that? Yes. Representative Nolan?
My understanding is that there are amendments being prepared for presentation in the other committee. And given that it is subject to further work there, I wonder why we're recommending a due pass, other than simply handing it off. I haven't seen the amendments.
Yeah, I have not either.
And I understand that there are amendments that are expected to be introduced in the other committee.
Mm-hmm.
As I just heard from representatives from OHSU. So,
okay, very excellent. That's an excellent suggestion, a reminder. Representative Hobson, could you re-motion without recommendation?
If you would like me to, Mr.
I would like you to.
Mr. Chair, do we want a new motion or do we want to just withdraw the recommendation?
Withdraw the first one,
I withdraw my motion regarding House Bill 3603.
Thank you. Representative Hobson withdraws her original motion regarding House Bill 3603. We need to discuss that. Okay, thank you. Representative Hobson, would you like to motion again?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3603 to the Committee on Health and Human Services.
Representative Hobson moves House Bill 3603 with no recommendation to the Committee on Health and Human Services. Discussion. Okay, Gina, would you call roll, please?
Aye.
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 Excused.
Aye.
Aye. Having received a constitutional majority, the bill is declared passed and will be moved to the Committee on Health and Human Services. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2744. Jim?
House Bill 2744 directs school districts and public charter schools to implement content standards and statewide assessments in mathematics, science, and English. Directs school districts to implement certificate of initial mastery in mathematics, science, and English. Makes implementation for other subjects optional. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003.
Thank you. Committee, you recall that we have had numerous public hearings on House Bill 2744, and we have offered a number of amendments. Fortunately, we have Cindy Hunt here from Legislative Council, and we have the Superintendent of Instruction, Susan Castillo, here as well. Cindy, would you come up and maybe run us through the amendments and clarify any questions that the members might have of you regarding this bill?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
do you want us to wait until she's gone through all of the amendments before going to questions or ask as we go?
My thought is maybe ask as we go, because the question will be fresh and we won't forget it. So I would say as you think of them.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's office. Which specific dash number amendments would you like me to go through? There's now 9 of them to the bill.
You know.
Unfortunately, Cindy, that's a very good question. Let's start with dash 6.
I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Representative Hobson.
Mr. Chair, before Cindy start, the dash 1 through 5 have been rolled into dash 6. That is a question.
Representative Hobson, Chair Backlund, portions of the dash 1 through 5 have been rolled into the dash 6. So if the dash 6, for example, if they're adopted, or some of the other amendments I'm going to be talking about today are adopted, you don't need the dash 1
that's
through 5.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay, the dash 6 amendments completely replace the bill as it now stands. And what I'm going to do, unless anyone has specific questions about specific sections, I'm going to only go over like the major portions of the amendments. So in keeping with that, the first section I'm going to go over is the section that directs the State Board of Education to adopt rigorous academic content standards in certain subjects, and that starts on page 5 of the amendments, and that's section 4. Under the dash 6 amendments, the State Board is still directed to adopt rigorous academic content standards in math, science, English, history, geography, economics, civics, physical education, the arts, and second languages. The amendments still leave up to school districts and public charter schools control over course content format, materials, and teaching methods.
Mr. Chair, sorry to start so early, but
that's
I'm
fine.
Not sure
Captain
I understand.
Locking, yes.
Did you say that this section requires the State Board to adopt content standards in these areas?
Representative Avakian, Chair Backlund, that's correct, although current law requires them to adopt content standards in these areas. So while the bill does continue that requirement, it's not necessarily an additional requirement on the board.
In the sentence right before the one you said, it says that the board shall regularly and periodically review and revise its goals. And is there another section in here that says that they have to, you don't have to cite it to me, but is there another one that says that they have to adopt standards in all those areas rather than just review and revise?
Right. On line 14, it says, basically the sentence says, this includes essential learning skills and rigorous academic content standards in, and it goes on with the subjects.
I just didn't know if in the previous sentence the review and revise was speaking to those standards. You see how I'm saying it says that it'll review standards, but it never says that it will actually adopt standards.
Representative Vakian, Chair Backlund, yeah, that's the current law right now, and I know that the State Board has seen that as a direction to them to adopt academic content standards in those areas.
Is the lack of that language, specific language, of a concern to
no.
you?
No, it isn't.
Have they adopted?
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might, the reference here to 329.025 does refer us back to page 3, line 25, and I believe that section directs the board to be accountable for the development of the system and then goes on to list on line 15 of page 4, rigorous academic standards, et cetera. So the reference is back to 025. Page 4, line 15.
Okay. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
My question was, have those standards been adopted?
Representative Nolan, Chair Backlund, yes, they have.
Then perhaps it's not so much of a concern if they
in all exist. In all of those subject areas?
Yes, all of the subject areas that are listed there, I believe they have been.
Yeah. Well, sorry for wasting our time.
No.
Okay.
No, we need to clarify these because we have had so many iterations of this that that's very important, I think, that we
right.
truly understand what it is we're considering.
Can I clarify with just one more time?
Yes, Representative.
This is, I think, is an important point on the rest of the amendments we're going to see. We're talking about the department has adopted academic standards in all of those areas. That's different from the requirements, the separate requirements for high school diploma.
Representative Vakian and Chair Back, that's correct. That's correct.
Thank you, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair.
Mr. Chair, I might suggest that since some of these questions are best answered by people from the department, we might want to invite the department to join Ms. Hunt at the witness stand so that their answers can be on the record.
Mm-hmm. Fine, come on, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that easy, Pat.
Okay, Cindy, proceed.
Okay, moving on to page 6. Towards the top of the page, it directs school districts and charter schools to offer students instruction in math, science, and English that meets the standards adopted by the state board and requirements adopted by the local school districts. Then the other subjects are treated somewhat differently in that the school districts and the charter schools shall offer students instruction in the other subjects that meets the standards adopted by the board or meet standards adopted by the school district. So under this, the state board's directed to adopt academic content standards, but a school district for certain subjects could choose to adopt their own standards and not follow the state board standards.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalton.
Could a school district choose not to adopt any standards in a specific subject?
Representative Chair Backlund. No, they would still have to adopt some sort of academic content standards in those subjects that are listed there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Certainly this language would allow a school district to adopt standards that could be described as higher than state standards. The language also appears to allow a district to adopt standards that are arguably lower than state standards.
Representative Nolan, you are correct. Or similar, but not the same. So, that's correct. For those certain subjects that are listed there.
So, I guess my question is, what's the point of statewide standards if we're giving permission to school districts to ignore them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, my understanding of the direction that we're
Pat, could you identify yourself? Yeah.
I'm Pat Burke, Deputy Superintendent for Educational Policy. Part of what's happening with this bill is an uncoupling of content standards from the certificate of the original mm-hmm. version of the Certificate of Initial Mastery. It is our understanding that if a local district is going to continue to comply with the voluntary standards, for example, in the area of social studies or second languages or the arts, they would still have to meet the state standards. They could not, for example, offer something that they might call an additional certification in second languages or PE for the fine arts without having that program meet the standards adopted by the state. If they chose to adopt an instructional program that was less than that, this bill envisions them having the authority to do so, but they would not be able to call that program meeting state standard or awarding a certificate in that standard. For example, in the area of second languages, the graduation requirement is 1 unit of credit. That would be the equivalent of 1 year. It is not likely that 1 year of instruction would actually be at a level that would be the equivalent of the state standard in second language that has already been adopted by the board. It's a much higher standard than what you would get in 1 year of instruction. So on one hand, they would be able to earn a credit for graduation, but that would not necessarily contain all of the material in state standard.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Thank you for the explanation. The language here relates only to the SIM, or does it relate also to academic standards, which apply as well to graduation expectations?
Representative Nolan, it applies to academic standards. Now, elsewhere in the amendments, we'll get into the requirements for the Certificate of Initial Mastery. Now, the other thing that I want to say, sort of in advance of going over the rest of the amendments, some of the other amendments treat this differently that you have before you today. So that's one of the policy choices before the committee.
Oh.
Yeah. Because some of the other some of the other amendments do not give school districts the option of adopting their own standards.
So who's, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. So whose amendments are the -6s?
Well, it's hard to say. We've had numerous meetings and have come up with we think are good solutions. Later, though, other concerns arise, and so then we've gone back and readdressed. For example, not that I'm saying we should, but we're starting at the -6 amendments. But if we were to, for example, committee members grab the -8 amendments, and Cindy too, and look to page 6, we're on the same 4A, but with a little bit of a different look. And so there are some choices involved here, but we might look at that. And Cindy, you might discuss the dash eights.
Here. Yeah, Chair Backlund, that's correct. The dash eights treat this that the school districts and the charter schools have to meet the academic content standards for all of those subjects that are adopted by the state board and the local board of the school district. And then getting over to the dash nines even, the dash nines treat that the same way, only in the dash nines, what the difference is that the subject of health is added to that list of subjects. So really, you have three options in front of you.
Okay, that was my question, Mr. Chair. Art, we actually have four amendments in front of us now, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Are they standalone amendments and alternate versions that would not be additive but would be separate?
Right.
And they should be looked at as alternatives rather than something that accumulates.
Right. The 6, 8s, and 9s are alternatives to one another. You would not want to adopt more than one of those. The 7s are a standalone amendment and have their own separate issue that's addressed in it.
And so they may be added.
They could be added to either the 6s, the 8s, or the 9s. Thanks a lot. That helps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Hobson.
And I think Representative Nolan's questions are so well taken, and this is exactly where we found ourselves, trying to do a new, improved version. And then, quite honestly, I won't speak for the chair, but the vice chair here was a little confused. And so that is exactly why we have Cindy and other smart folks here to plow us through it a little bit.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I think getting back to the dash sixes, in speaking about health, in the dash sixes, school districts are required to offer health and that meets requirements adopted by the State Board of Ed, but health is not raised to the level of the other subjects. This is reflective of current law in that health isn't part of the other part of the academic content standards now. In the dash 8, health is treated the same way, but then in the dash 9, health is with the other subjects, and the board is directed to adopt academic content standards in health. It's my understanding that they have not done that yet, since they weren't required to do it.
Mr. Kelly.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where did the health language come from?
You're talking about in the bill, in the amendment?
Within the amendment, I suppose it's number 9.
Okay, dash 9.
Representative Dalto, Chair Backlund, originally the subject of health is put in, well, originally health is mentioned in the statute and basically says that the common curriculum goals adopted by the state board need to include health. In addition, in the graduation requirements for the state board, there's a requirement that students must take. I can't remember how many credits of health, though. Right.
I didn't hear Mr. Burke's answer.
Sorry. A half unit of health and a half unit or a full unit of physical education for high school graduation.
And originally in House Bill 2744, I don't think it mentioned that school districts were going to continue to offer health. And there was a concern that was raised that by not mentioning health specifically, we're saying you don't have to teach health, and that wasn't the intention. The intention was still to meet the current graduation requirements adopted by the state board. So health was originally put into the dash sixes because of that, very specifically, say, school districts, you need to still be offering health. And then, and as an expansion of that, the dash nines were developed to say that health is just as important as these other subjects, and to direct the board to adopt standards in that. There's also a Senate bill, Senate Bill 75, which directs the department to adopt standards in health that meet the national standards. And I think the Senate committee passed that bill out. Anyone know? I can't remember. I know they've had hearings on the bill. But anyway, so there is some proponents of that, I guess, in the building
I might add that the first amendment that we made, or the first concern we had for the original language in House Bill 2744, was to make it clear that the bill would not affect current high school graduation requirements or current high school curriculum requirements. There was some concern because of the little three-letter word may, and so we wanted to make sure we clarified that, and I think we have. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think along those lines, when we were talking about some of the amendments, one of the purposes of going through all this is to try and at least put a holding period on the burden that we've placed on the districts and the teachers. So there was a concern about the health, because I do believe that we do not as yet have content standards for health. Randy, you nod your head, shake your head, whatever you need to know if I say something wrong here. On the other hand, there are national standards developed for health that I would think that the department would be willing to adopt until at some point in the future, when we would in fact develop our own state standards if our teachers wanted to do that.
Those national standards and other work, but we don't want to give the impression that the department has done nothing in health. If you are correct, yeah, that there are no formally adopted content standards in health for the certificate of admission, as we have done in other contexts. But there is certainly curriculum guidance, and we do use the national health standards, and we do provide information to districts about textbooks that meet standards and other advice and technical assistance around health standards. But as the chair just mentioned, we're not necessarily looking at a change in the high school graduation requirement, the difference between SIM standards and diploma requirements. The healthy, perhaps even still the graduation requirement, and we need the national standards and other documents to provide guidance to the schools around that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. In that, one of the things I think we've all been clear on is we don't want additional burden on the department or on the teachers out there trying to implement what we do, but we do want to maintain what standards we can.
Okay, so the next section that I'm going to move to is Section 6 in the amendments. And
On the dash six,
that starts on page 8. And, I'm sorry, Section 7 in the amendments, which starts on page 8. This section is the section that lays out most of the requirements for the Certificate of Initial Mastery. And what this section is doing in the dash sixes is that it's saying that the State Board shall adopt for the SIM requirements in math, science, English, history, geography, economics, civics, PE, the arts, and second languages. Then it further directs the school districts to offer the SIM in math, science, and English, and then leaves it up to the school districts to implement the SIM in the other subjects. So that's a change from current law, because current law, the SIM includes these other subjects. So that's a change there. In the dash 8 amendments, the State Board still directed to adopt requirements for the SIM in those subjects, and it still leaves it up to the option of the school district to adopt in the other subjects. And then in the dash 9, there's a bit of a change in that the State Board's only directed to adopt requirements for the SIM in math, science, and English, and it doesn't leave the option to the school districts to have a SIM in other subjects. So in the dash 9s, a SIM across the state means math, science, and English. In the dash 6s and 8s, depending on which school district you're in, it could mean math, science, and English plus one or more other subjects.
And that was that was the kind of the starting point for House Bill 2744 initially. Currently, if I have this right, we have a number of subjects. If we count English as one subject and social science as one subject, by the time the current law would be fully implemented, we would have seven subjects for a SIM. And so we've narrowed that list of seven down to three: English, mathematics, and science, and made the others then optional by school district. And that's what you've just explained. And Cindy, is that right? In each
right,
of the
correct.
Three amendments.
Mm-hmm. But then the nine say you're only going to have, if you have a SIM, it's only going to be in math, English, and science, and it's just not going to include the other subjects. So mm-hmm. it's the most narrow of the three. Mm-hmm. But. I should also mention the other big change in the SIM statute is that the amendments take out the direction that the assessment method shall include work samples and tests and may include portfolios, and also the direction that students shall be allowed to collect credentials over a period of years culminating in a project or exhibition that demonstrates attainment of the required knowledge and skills that have been measured by a variety of valid assessment methods. The dash 7 amendments, this is where they come into play, in that they do what I just described, and then they add to that a further statement on portfolios that says the State Board of Education or a school district may not require the creation of a student portfolio as part of the requirements of the SIM.
Okay.
Now the
and Superintendent, if you want to jump in here, you certainly are free to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But either comments, questions, whatever, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the next major section in the bill draft is Section 8, which is dealing with the statewide assessment system.
You're on dash 6.
Dash 6.
Okay.
And under the dash 6 amendments, the Department of Education is still directed to develop a statewide assessment in math, science, English, history, geography, economics, and civics. And then it directs the school districts and the charter schools that they have to do the statewide assessment in math, science, and English. And this is in keeping with federal law now. And then it leaves it at the option of the school districts and the charter schools whether or not they implement the statewide assessment system in history, geography, economics, and civics. In the dash 8 amendments, it's the same treatment for the statewide assessment. And also in the dash 9s, it's the same treatment. Okay. The next major section in the bill draft is the same for each of the amendments, and that addresses the CAM. And that would be the last, well, section 13 of the amendments. And what this section does is, right now, the State Board of Education and each school district is directed to, prior to September 1st, 2004, to institute programs to allow students to qualify for the CAM. What these amendments do is delay the implementation of the CAM by 4 years back to 2008. And as I was saying, that's the same in each of these amendments in front of you. And then finally, the amendments, they take effect July 1, 2003 to enable school districts to be following the new changes for the next school year. So with that, if anyone has any questions.
Representative Hobson.
Mr. Chair, my good friend to the left of me here, I just love to say that, suggested...
He's still to the right of me.
suggested, not totally facetiously, that we almost need a spreadsheet. I think it would be extremely healthy to differentiate between these amendments. The CAM part is clear, it's the same thing and everything. It postpones it for 4 years. But at least for me, and obviously Representative Dalto, to have those, as you just said them so well, differentiated, I think would be very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Mm-hmm. I think we keep talking in this bill like it's water that's finally quieting down and becoming clear, and then an issue is raised and the water becomes suddenly muddy again. So, but it is good that we're working through this. And I think we want to do it well and want to do it right. So I would agree that a spreadsheet or something similar would be helpful. And we'll try to get that.
Well, I have one question.
Yes, Representative Bakken.
That would help clear some of the muddiness for me. Just a piece of information that I don't know about where the department is at with regard to assessments in the areas. What subject areas currently are there, first, no assessments for, and then second, the department is in the process of creating assessments, but maybe they're not complete?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, the current assessment system includes assessments in English language arts. That would be reading, multiple choice, and writing, and speaking. Mathematics would include both math, multiple choice, and a math problem-solving assessment. And science, multiple choice. Those three content areas, English, math, and science, are done and are implemented. We are currently this year piloting a social studies multiple choice assessment. Not yet approved, not yet in place. We have a recommended scale, which is the American Council of Teachers of Foreign Language scale, which is also been recommended by the Oregon Council of Teachers of Foreign Language, a scale score of 4 or higher on that scale as a performance standard for second language. And we have been training Oregon teachers in what's called an oral proficiency inventory, or a way of conducting such an evaluation. In the area of health,
I'm sorry, I don't know what that means on the second language one. Does that mean the assessments are done and teachers are being taught how to do them, or they're not done yet?
It's not a formal assessment. It's not a pencil and paper assessment. Okay. It's a way of conducting an oral interview. And we didn't create it. It's actually a process created by the American Council of Teachers of Foreign Language. We have no assessments right now in the area of the arts or health or physical education, nor do we have anything currently under development.
Would you repeat that again, Pat? I missed that. On the no assessments.
We have no assessments in the arts. Some local districts have developed their own assessments. Mm-hmm. We have no statewide assessments in the arts. We have no statewide assessment in health. And we have no statewide assessment in physical education. Okay. Nor do we have any under development.
And with regard to standards, I just want to make sure that I understood this part correctly earlier. You do have standards developed in all of the curriculum areas that you just mentioned.
That's correct.
Including health?
I'm sorry. No.
Health goes back to the Senate bill and what could be adopted through administrative rule if you adopted the federal standards or something like that.
That's correct.
But currently mm-hmm. not adopted. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I would say, also as a reminder, do you remember the opening day of the session, actually, in our first committee meeting, the federal government defines core content in a manner that does not include health or physical education. It included English, math, science, social sciences, fine arts, and world languages, but did not include health or physical education in its definition of core academic content.
May I one more, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Thank you. One of the things that I've struggled with all of these various amendments, is the notion that we have
required curriculum that seems to find its requirement at the high school level, but that then gets lost at the elementary and middle school level. And I don't believe there's anything in current law that requires any of these subjects, maybe, at the elementary and middle school level, unless a local school board happens to adopt a requirement. Before I go on, am I right to that point?
Our current law doesn't specifically say the subjects are offered K-12, although our current law does talk about academic content standards, and so to be able to meet these standards, a school district would have to offer the subjects to teach their kids. It also, there's also law and rule that directs school districts to offer a comprehensive education, and that's in all K-12, but it doesn't specify the subjects.
It doesn't specify comprehensive, which I would take it to mean that that would be left up to a school board then to further define for themselves, a local school board.
But the school district would still have to offer enough content that their children could meet the standards adopted by the state board in those subjects. But you're correct in that the state law doesn't direct a school district to offer so many hours of art at like an elementary school level or a year of art, or it leaves it up to the school district how they're going to meet that requirement.
And I don't mean to just keep going. Is it okay?
Follow up a couple more.
The way I read the statutes that we have before us now are that even though there are content standards that are adopted for each of these subject areas, which could apply to K through 12, that there's nothing that requires the curriculum to be taught in K through 8. There are when you get to the diploma, because there are requirements for the diploma which will guarantee that that curriculum is offered in 9 through 12. But I see a requirement that the standards be adopted, but not a requirement that the curriculum be provided in K through 8. Am I right about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bakke, the Oregon Administrative Rule requires at the elementary level that 900 hours of instruction at grade 8, 850 hours of instruction at grade 5 and the grades underneath grade 5 be provided on an annual basis in the academic content adopted by the state. It used to be there in old Oregon Administrative Rule, there were specific minutes of instruction required in each of the content areas. That was dropped in favor of an annual number of instructional hours that must be provided in the academic content provided by the state. So it is, but you are correct, it is different when you talk about units of credit for high school graduation. Those are defined differently. The unit of credit is defined in Oregon Administrative Rule as 130 clock hours of instruction or equivalent work in the content specified.
And so you're talking about Administrative Rule, not the statutes. And I think one of the things that's been difficult as we review these statutes is, at least for me, that I have the fear of losing PE, health, music, arts, second language at those lower grade levels because they're not dictated by statute, whereas you can find for the 9 through 12 in the diploma and the graduation requirements, things like this in other areas. I think that's been part of the confusion, why we've had so many PE teachers and everybody else coming to us and testifying, you know, in essence, save my program, because it's not reflected in the state statute anywhere.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Susan Castillo, Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. If we could ask for Pat to be excused at this point, we have we are under our peer review today from the federal government in our efforts to implement No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. Pat is needed back across the street to continue that process today, and so we're going to have Randy jump into his seat and help with answering any questions that you might have. And I just wanted to add to that, since I did mention the peer review folks are here, they are very impressed with the comprehensive assessment system that we have in place and indicated that today.
and especially the performance, the student performance part of what we ask students to demonstrate what they know in our assessment system that we have. And so we were, it was nice to get that feedback and a wonderful affirmation that we're on the right track and getting good results. So just wanted to share that comment with you today as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Becca.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, and members of the committee, in addition to being able to answer some questions here today for you as you're going through this, it looks like your bill is going to get quite a bit of marking up here, and just wanted to be here to say that I know that you have spent a good deal of time and allowed for a wonderful amount of testimony about our assessment system and really getting a good look at what it is and what it includes. And I guess what I wanted to weigh in on today is that my concern that we don't create some confusion about what our assessment system is going to include or not include as you move forward on this legislation. I know one of the amendments mentioned talks about, has language that says may not require portfolios. That does provide more clarity in the bill. And so I just wanted to encourage you to please, you know, we are very proud of the comprehensiveness of our assessment system and want to make sure that we move forward in that direction, and that as we design this legislation, that it's real clear on what we are going to continue or not continue to do. And I also wanted to let you know that I invited a teacher to come along today. If we have an opportunity, I'd love to be able to ask him to come up real briefly. And he is a principal at Bush Elementary School. His name is Dave Berthoff. He was a former teacher, an Oregon Teacher of the Year in 1999, a Milken Outstanding Educator Award winner in 2001, and is someone who very much believes in the comprehensiveness of our assessment system, and wanted to just share with you a little bit about why he is so strongly supportive of it. If you have time to hear from him, that would be great.
Okay, thank you. Before we... Dave is here. We'll call Dave up in a moment. Before we move on, Representative Hobson brought up the possibility of maybe a spreadsheet or something that we could compare rather easily the different amendments and what it is that they're basically saying. Would it be possible if committee administrator Jim works with Cindy on this and has this ready for us, say, by next Monday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, at least as soon as you can work it.
it would
Representative
be
Nolan?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It would be very helpful if we could have it for at least 24 hours before we have to vote on the bill and the amendments.
When we get those completed, we will get those to your hands as quickly as possible. So 24 hours may be the minimum. It might be more than 24 hours.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Just don't give me the press.
Okay. Randy?
Chair Backman, I'd like to take a minute.
Be sure to indicate your name.
Oh, Randy Harns with the Department of Education. I'd like to address Representative Avakian's question about the elementary standards. And I think it's important to go back and look at the law as it currently stands. It does talk about standards that are benchmarked to grade levels 3, 5, 8, and 10. And the content standards that the department has developed are benchmarked at those grade levels. And we offer kind of a model or optional curriculum for the intervening years as well. In addition, and in carrying that out, the department or the State Board of Education has adopted administrative rule that directs school districts to have a comprehensive K-12 curriculum that addresses the content standards that are listed in statute. So, in fact, yes, school districts do have direction to provide instruction in all of those areas at the various grade levels to the extent necessary to adopt to address the content standards.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randy, if I'm understanding you correctly, then in conjunction with what Pat said earlier, the focus is on the achievement of the students as measured by the benchmarks rather than on seat time with a specific number of minutes on math.
Representative Kaplan, Representative Hopkins, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Milwaukee.
But all by administrative rule, all pertaining to the benchmark grades, with those programs falling as optional in the intervening years.
Representative Backlund, Representative Milwaukee, the intervening years, the curriculum is made available as model curriculum of one way, a kind of a scope and sequence of how to address the content in order to prepare kids for those assessments at the various benchmarks, which actually now is almost moot in that we're moving towards a system with assessment required every year.
So, Randy, Representative Vakian has raised a very significant issue regarding curriculum in K through 8. You're saying that the concerns are I don't want to use the word not valid, but they're not of a concern.
I think they're legitimate concerns, and that we have addressed that issue by administrative rule. I think it could be a reasonable thing to include in statute that would further clarify that.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It'd be nice if we bring up Dave. That'd be excellent. Yeah. I might add, Superintendent, that Dave won his Teacher of the Year award while teaching in a Kaiser elementary school, and you might guess where I'm from. Oh.
Chairperson Backlund, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me. For the record, I'm Dave Bertoff. I am principal at Bush Elementary School here in Salem, and before that I was teacher at Clear Lake Elementary in Kaiser for 10 years, taught 4th and 5th grade, and we've been doing a lot of discussion today about assessment. And I'm here as a former teacher and as a current administrator to tell you that I think we're on the right track. I think we've gotten it right. And I was pleased to hear from Superintendent Castillo that the U.S. Department of Ed is recognizing that. And when I say we've gotten it right, what I mean is that we are continuing to develop a comprehensive, balanced, sensible approach to assessing kids. What is the point of assessment? It's to figure out what kids know and move them toward meeting the content standards, meeting the benchmarks. And when we can do that, we have multiple choice tests that test their knowledge of content and their skills. Then we have opportunities for them to apply those skills and content knowledge with the performance-based assessments that we have, math problem solving, the writing assessments. And we have work samples, which are also performance-based assessments that allow our students to really apply what they know to further develop their skills, and work samples provide a tie between classroom instruction and content standards. So we take a wide variety of the way we look at kids and figure out what they know. And I would encourage us to continue to do so. When I was Teacher of the Year, I had the opportunity to speak with many teachers from all over the United States. And, of course, as teachers do, we talked about assessment quite a bit. The more we did, the more proud I was of our state, of not just looking at pencil and paper tests or multiple choice tests, not at that time over-testing and testing at every grade level, although we're moving in that direction. We really take a sensible approach at it, and it gives teachers, students, and parents the information that they need. So I would just encourage us in our conversations that we continue to provide that balanced approach of giving parents and students and teachers the information they need about how our students are progressing toward the content standards. And that's my testimony. I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Dave, I have a question for you.
Certainly.
Do you perceive your experience as an elementary school teacher and now as a principal?
Yes, sir.
Are there problems that do teachers have problems with say too much in the way of time commitment to doing the work samples, for example, recording them, that sort of thing? What do you think?
Okay, Chairperson Backlund, members of the committee, I would think that at the elementary level, especially, which is my expertise, the performance-based assessments and the work samples are things that we did anyway. Those are that's the way we're starting to teach. We have writing samples, we have math samples, we have those items in place. I think that the problem is not the assessment system, it's the implementation of the assessment system, which now as an administrator, that's my job, to help us be sensible about the way we do that. So when we first started this in the early 90s, I think we did have some problems because it was seen as a benchmark year, forgive the jargon, 3rd, 5th, 8th, 10th, 12th. It's those teachers' jobs. You can bet where we were hired as new teachers, 3rd, 5th, 8th, 10th, and 12th. Since that time, we've discovered it takes all of us to prepare kids for these assessments, and elementary teachers especially have worked together to lighten the load. And I know some high school, some secondary folks are doing the same with using each department to come up with writing samples, for instance. And so it's our job as a profession to keep working together to solve some of those issues.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Any further questions?
Representative Dalto.
Mr. Chair, it sounded like a warning to me that you received Teacher of the Year and you no longer are a teacher. That seemed kind of interesting to me, I suppose. Let that be a lesson for folks that are thinking about doing a good job teaching. We might grab you into administration.
Duly noted. Well, very good, Dave. Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
We at one point had hoped that we could go to work session and complete this House Bill 2744. I think it's clear to all of us that we are not going to do that. I also want to announce that we're getting a fiscal on the 2744, and that's not quite complete. And so we need to wait on that. So we'll bring this back as quickly as we can, hopefully with clarity and understanding, so that we can make some good decisions. So with that, Ozzie, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose, the Confederate Oregon School Administrators, and I know this is a work session, and thank you for letting me chair come in. I spent the last 4 hours with our policy commission on this issue, by the way, but I wanted to say a couple things about to Representative Avakian's questions and the issue of whether we have PE teachers or whatever at whatever level. The benchmarks are set, and someone ahead of me pointed out one I wanted, that we no longer think of the benchmarks as something that people do at a certain point. You're moving kids through the process, and they have to do stuff during grade 4 to be ready for grade 5. And so the benchmarks drive what you do against the content and the curriculum. The issue about whether we have PE teachers or other kinds of things that are... Now we have the three core areas that No Child Left Behind and so forth are the core. And we'd love to have all of them and have the resources to do everything. Those others, there will be less support for those as you focus on the others. But that's a resource issue, not an issue of whether the content and the curriculum is in the statute. I believe if you look at our curriculum guides and the standards and the content stuff, you'd be very satisfied that all the stuff we need to be doing is being told. The issue of how much of it you do, in part, is a resource issue. My kids at Shirley High School or Shirley Elementary School had a full-time physical education program all through the 70s and 80s in an elementary school. Many schools don't have that today. It's not because they didn't want the PE program. It's because of resources.
Which is to say a lack of.
Yeah. Yeah. You said that. I didn't.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, then, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2744, and furthermore, we will adjourn the meeting.
I didn't think it well.